This is Progressive Radio, a weekly conversation hosted by Matthew Rothschild, editor of The Progressive Magazine, a leading voice for peace and social justice. For more information about Progressive Radio or The Progressive Magazine, log on to our website at progressive.org.
I'm Matt Rothschild, and welcome to Progressive Radio, which you can also grab off our website over at progressive.org. Today, I'm delighted to have in the studio right here with me Dr. Luther Castillo of Honduras. He was chosen as the country's Doctor of the Year back in 2006. He's opened a hospital in an area that had been underserved as far as health goes, and he's been active in resisting the coup and the aftermath of the coup in Honduras. Dr. Luther Castillo, welcome to Progressive Radio.
Thank you. Thank you for this wonderful opportunity to be sharing with you and with many other people who are listening to this wonderful radio in different part of the country.
Well, the pleasure is mine, and I'm sure the pleasure is the listeners, too, because we don't often here in the United States get to hear the perspective of a doctor from Honduras, much less someone who's been resisting the military coup that happened in 2009 and someone who can bring us up to date about the consequences of that coup. Why don't we start with a little biographical information about you. Why did you decide to become a doctor?
Yeah, I was born in a small village in La Mosquitia in Honduras. My village name is San Pedro Tocamacho. It's located in the department of Gracias a Dios in the area of La Mosquitia. It's a small village with like 2,000 people inhabitant.
I think a lot of Americans, if they know the word mosquito, as far as Central America goes, they think about Nicaragua.
Nicaragua. But we have Mosquitia area in Honduras too, where ethnic group Mosquito live, who is declared Patrimony of Humanity because of the trees and many other resources who were located there.
It's an indigenous group.
This indigenous group. Then Garifuna people, who are another ethnic group who are come where I come from. Then I am Garifuna. I speak Garifuna. Then we have, they are living in Atlantic coast in Honduras. Then my village is a small village in Atlantic coast without electricity, without running water. Then I born in that reality in my country. But when I was child, I was... The reality showed me the dream to be a doctor who was difficult to do it in my country because poor people usually travel to the city and rent a small place and work in the day and go to study in the night. And after I finished, when I did my 7th, 8th, and 9th grade, I have to walk from my community 3 hours to go to the more nearest community who has a secondary school with 7th, 8th, and 9th grade. It was 3 hours to go and 3 hours to return. That this dynamic that my father was talking to us every day, that you have to walk because education is the only way to break the chain of the mind. And we grow with this perspective. I left out after that to work in the city and studied in the night and the day and go to study in the night and work in the day. With that dynamic, I finished my 10, 11, and 12th grade. Then we were struggling to go to the university, you know, who was really difficult. I was dreamed to be a doctor because of the reality of my community, not really because I saw doctors in my communities when I was a child, not really with that, because the reality, we had to take the people who were sick in hammock 6 hours or 8 hours in the hammock to reach and not to another village where we have somebody who know how to do some injuries, treat
them.
There
wasn't a doctor in your
there
village.
Wasn't a doctor. It was some people reach, some people die in the way, we had to return them. Then this reality gave me this a small idea how to become a doctor. Then I traveled to the capital after I finished to then register at the university, but it was difficult for me to continue because I had to work and you can never receive your lab class in the afternoon or in the night. In the medicine, it's difficult to do it by that way. But in 1999, I got a great opportunity after Hurricane Mitch affected Honduras. And Latin American School of Medicine was created in La Habana, Cuba, and provided a scholarship to some of those young fellows who were specifically from the area who was very affected by the Hurricane Mitch. Then I was one of the get selected from the area, more remote area, people from indigenous background, of campesino background. Then traveled to La Habana to the Latin American School of Medicine to be trained as a doctor. Then I got that
wonderful. What was that like,
opportunity.
Studying to be a doctor in Cuba?
Well, it was the wonderful opportunity of my life. One, because we were at the school with young fellow from more than 20 countries. Now the school has have 68 different countries, and we were with students from many other parts of the world where we have the opportunity to interchange, to, you know, to come to the conclusion that we have the same history, the same reality, and common problem. Then how we can come together to look for a common solution, you know, between ourselves. It was the wonderful opportunity to be training under the philosophy of solidarity, humanity, and become a man's and woman's of science and consciousness.
Because the Cuban healthcare system and the health education system is renowned throughout Latin America.
Yeah, it's very renowned because of the indicator. See, so, you know, Cuba has 5.1 infant mortality for every 1,000 births. Our many other countries in Latin America has 32, like Honduras, 68, like Haiti, and many others high, because they are very focusing in this human way to do medicine, to treat the people like a patient, then treat them like a... But that's quality of high level of scientific medicine become with a high level of consciousness in this process, and work a lot in the process of preventive healthcare, who is most of the problem of Latin America, who is focusing specifically on the curative healthcare. Only the 5% of the healthcare problem is solved in the emergency room. The other 95% is solved in the community, working in the primary healthcare. Then Cuba has a great experience in this process, how to combine these two areas of medicine and work a lot and get great results in this process of primary healthcare.
And community healthcare.
And community healthcare.
I'm speaking with Dr. Luther Castillo of Honduras. He has been active in setting up a hospital in the area where he grew up that was totally underserved, as he's been telling us. And he also has been active in participating in the resistance against the coup in Honduras that happened in 2009. And so you came back to Honduras from Cuba in what year, and what did you do then?
I had the opportunity to be in the first graduating team in 2005, and then I graduated with other 1,638 young fellow from 19 different countries. Then I decided with some few of my company return back home and try to do something for our people. And it was time to say that our people cannot wait no more. It was difficult for us to continue in La Habana or do a residency. And then it was some decision who was hard, but we had to do it and say, okay, some of us have to leave back home and start to do something for our people. But since we were students, we were returning every vacation to work in the more far-east area, who become a great dynamic for us to engage the future doctor with the community, engage the community with this future doctor, and increase the commitment to return back. Because one of our biggest problems is that when you train human resources from the poorest area, nobody wants to return back to the poverty.
Right.
People look for another. And this is part of human being behavior.
And they have better opportunities.
And better opportunity to leave. Then when we decide to start a project, then I return back to the community and got this great homework for my company to return. How can I build a small system? The idea, it was not only to build a small facility of hospital, is how we can create a strategy to build alternative model of healthcare who have to be free profession in underserved area.
So you offer free healthcare?
Yeah, we offer free healthcare. Then we decide to accompany with the community, talk with the community, meet with the community by community, talking with the people by the idea. It was difficult to convince them to be engaged in the process, involved in the process. People receive every 4 years politicians who come to say a lot of lies, promising people a lot of things. And people always believe that everybody who come to the community are doing the same thing. People don't believe in politicians. They don't even believe in themselves sometimes.
They just thought you were blowing smoke.
Yeah, yeah. And then people, and then we started the project with people looking for, they donate a piece of land in one of the community who we select the most central community where they have access from the other community to come. Then we build with the people. We build a small tent in the area. It was to make sure and to show our people that new era was coming. We were attending people there looking for medicine by donation, attending each people and talking with each patient how to be incorporated in this process.
So you had a medical tent?
With a medical tent. We got a medical tent and a tent inside the medical tent. It was a provisional tent. We cut the wood inside the community and put some something, you know, and put some divide with paper and something, and we start to work. And the people see some of the difference, the people get involved, and everybody wanted to donate voluntary work, mm-hmm. who was very great because we were building another concept, the concept of social property. Then people get engaged with the property project, and they feel that the project is their own, you know, and they can protect it. And that was what we want to create. And every house and the communities donate 10 days of work. Then we make the calendar, which the people have to come. And we were looking for the source of materials, rebar, bricks, and people come and build the facility with us and accompany us in building the facility.
So there's a real sense of community ownership.
Though. Yeah, it's a community ownership, who is something difficult sometimes to see by even the traditional government view, because they only think about public sector or in the private sector. But now, and the community are coming to waiting for government in those areas more than 215 days or 15 years of government arrival to this area. No hospital in no one of the 46 government community. Then we have to do it by ourselves. Mm-hmm. Then when we become with this new idea, then they ask us, you are public? No, we don't receive no support from the government. Are you private? No, we're not making profit. That means the government has this challenge to change some of the policy and to write inside a new policy, new kind of medical facility that's a popular and public or communitary concept, where the people, only people are honor of the facility, and the government have to give them the support to continue to do it. Then we reach to that level, and then with the community, with the hand of solidarity of some of our brothers and sisters from the United States, we get a furniture, we get equipment from Cuba, like ultrasound, X-ray, and we continue. And since now, we have been providing more than 500,000 medical attention for free, 687,000 people, patients we have been treating, and medicine for free, and a program for a pregnant woman for free. And this is a challenge to the system, how much we can do with nothing, without the government support, and how much solidarity can do together, how much people can do with their efforts together.
This is real people's medicine that you're practicing, Dr. Luther Castillo in Honduras. What are some of the conditions, the illnesses or diseases that are most common that you face, or that the people in your communities face?
Yeah, Jew, where we are, these people are still dying from preventive disease, diarrhea, parasite, worm in children, respiratory disease, you know, who are very preventive, and if we work on it, we are trying to. And most of the disease who affect the elder people are diabetes, who is all over the world, but it's increasing in the area.
Diabetes,
and but in the system, the type of diabetes type 2. But most of those diabetes, with the diagnosis very late, then it transform like insulin dependent. Then that means that's the way for patient to die, because they don't have money to get the insulin. We have the problem with high blood pressure, and who work a lot because it's located next to the sea without electricity. The only way for people to preserve the meat would be salt. That increases the high blood pressure. And we're fighting against those pathologies. We have high pathology of sacrolumbalgia. Sacrolumbalgia is a back pain because people carry boots, 100 pounds of food in the head for every day to feed their children. Then they got sacrolumbalgia.
Is this mostly women carrying it, or women and men?
Women and men, but a specific woman has a lot problem with the sacrolumbalgia. And we face this problem like a pandemic in the area, because every patient that we see has a back pain. And if you see that and treat that in the traditional way to do medicine, because this is a new way to do medicine, not only in the biological way, in a biopsychosocial way, this biological way, how they teach you at the university, people are not only anatomy, bones and muscles. No, they think and they grow an environment.
So what's the new way that you treat it?
Then the new way we treat it is to go to the causes of the problem. In the biological way, you should give them anti-inflammatory, 500 milligram every 3 times a day for 7 days, but you send the patient to lie down in a bed for 15 days with her leg up. But how can a woman with 8 children, 7 children can go and lie down in a bed for it? That didn't function in the area. Then we look for solution for this. We find out the new type of solar cooker to make it inside the community, type of solar oven. The roots of this problem is the poverty, but immediately problem is carrying a wood.
So then the solar oven
don't need a wood. You get always, we have sun in the area where you can put the rice, oil, and water and go and put it in the oven and go to the field and return back. At 12, you got rice ready, but they don't have to worry to carry wood back to cook the rice.
So that's then, working for you.
That's working, but we are encouraging people to using it. But with this integral solution, we can save the environment. People cannot cook too much wood, but we can save children for any respiratory disease because of the smoke. But we have another problem of anemia because of the parasite, and we can boil the water and have a quality of water because 90% of the problem of the worm and parasite become from the quality of water. This exercise, how to do integral medicine, how to give this focus of biopsychosocial way to approach medicine, and looking for solution for many other problems.
It's really interesting, integrated community participatory healthcare that Dr. Luther Castillo is inaugurating in Honduras. He's my guest today on Progressive Radio. I'm Matt Rothschild. I'm the editor at the Progressive Magazine, and thank you for listening. You've been, aside from these innovative health developments that you've been ushering in, you've been also politically engaged. And in Honduras, things really came to a head in the summer of 2009 when the military overthrew the democratically elected government of Manuel Zelaya. And you had been appointed to a post in the Zelaya government. I saw on the web when I was doing some research here, you were supposed to be the director of international cooperation in the foreign ministry. But that happened just, that announcement came just a couple weeks before the coup. Did you actually take your post in the foreign ministry, or did you not have time to do that?
Yeah, we didn't have time to do it good because we entered to the office and to help in the process of the, really to help in the process for the national survey, because we were agreed to ask our people for the first time in their life what their opinion for what was happening in the country. And we, as a young people, I say, wow, that's the opportunity to join this process and go and accompany my people, asking my people what they want, how they want to live. Then we saw it as a positive point, this just to apply a simple survey, you know, just a simple question to people, are you agree in the election of November to have a four battle? And this four battle in Honduras, we have three battle, one to vote for the mayor, another one to work for the Congress, another one to work for president. We was asking, just put a four battle and ask the people, are you agree in the election of November to put a four battle, asking people if we can do some change in the Constitution, what they think about it. Because our Constitution was written under the military presidency, we don't have inside the Constitution the right of the women, the right of the children, the right of indigenous, the right of workers, you know, only the right of the private, biggest private companies. Then we were accompanying that process in the capital, helping our people how, what's the method to do this survey and ask them about their right, about what, how they want to live. Then this process, it was, they couldn't let us to continue doing it. And, because the oligarchy in the country, the 14 families who control the country to put the president and take out the president, they don't want to hear the voice of people. They are afraid of the voice of the people because people can ask, why me, who is selling in the corner of my house two eggs and two tomatoes, I'm paying taxes. But why does big companies, you know, Kentucky's and McDonald's and Pizza Hut in our country didn't pay no cents for taxes? And people are asking for the differences. And they were very afraid to hear the voices of the people. They flew and traveled in the helicopter because they don't want to see the misery that how they have been converting the country. Then we decide, as a young people, you say, okay, well, if we don't do nothing for our people, nobody going to come and do it for us. And not all of us have to leave the country. Some of us have to stay there and fighting because the new generation are going to come after us, who are going to say, hey, because you didn't do nothing, you know, to change the things. Then we decide to join this process of construction of of new hope for our people and joined this process in the government of Celaya in the last 2 months. We just spent there like a month and a half, and the coup came, and we joined the process of national resistance movement. You know, when they designed the coup, who was not really nationally designed, it was with the support of many international forces against the process of development in Latin America, against those processes who were growing, nobody can stop that process. It's like, you know, taking a ball on the water and, you know, for a long time, you know, when you keep that ball for a long time on the water, you know, sometimes you cannot have this strong with your muscles and your tenderness to keep it there. Then when that ball come out, you know, hit your face. That's what's happening in Latin America. That's happening in Honduras. Honduras were doing some progressing. President Zelaya, who came from traditional party, and they elect him, put him a president because the oligarchy was thinking that he was the one who they can handle more easier in this process. And he become with some proposal to return to the poor a little bit, a penny of how much they have been taken out from them for years and years. And he started to talk about scholarship and education, food for children in the school, electricity. Then he moved forward and say, okay, why we have the gallon of gasoline here, the gas here, for 120 lempira for $8? Why? Why we don't buy gas directly where those companies who sell us the gas buy the gas? The same way in Venezuela. All of them. Then he moved forward. And saying a treatment with Petro Caribe and bring gas. And people were seeing, wow, everybody on the television was criticizing Zelaya buying gas from Venezuela. But when people say, wow, the gas from 120 dropped to 45 lamps, you know, who is like a $2, you know, only the
so
gallon.
So people,
you know,
were really people benefiting.
Was defending this process, mm-hmm. and signed the enjoyment with ALBA program, and all those things become alliances from national and international to stop the process in Honduras, right. and make a military coup attack.
And so what happened, they took Zelaya away, and what happened to you? Were you under some pressure? There was a lot of repression in the country, I know.
There was a lot of repression, and during the coup, the military broke the doors of the hospital. They said they were
of your hospital.
In my hospital.
Were you in there when they did that?
No, I was. Unfortunately, I was out for that day. They were looking for me, but they said they were looking for drugs and, you know, like intimidating in their process. They closed the hospital, but people opened the hospital 2 hours afterward. When we talk with people, they say, if you are not ready to defend the hospital, then we close. Then people say, no, we accompany the process. And under all this repression after people start all over the country coming together and now build the national front against a resistance front, who was before against the coup, but now is the national resistance front to rebuild the country. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and some people who were supporting the coup say that, no, that's only for 7 days. But people march more than 300 days every day in the street, you know. And until now, it's a big movement in the country. They already agree. We build already the electoral win of the front resistance. And we build a new party who is Partido Libre, Libertad y Refundación. This is a new party. 4 days ago, it's registered officially in the government. And we're going to fight in the next election with our people to take Xiomara Castro as a woman who's going to be our president.
And that election is in the fall of 2013?
In 2013, then the next election. We're working village by village, working, meeting with people, talking with people, constructing this process of people power. Because we don't have to forget that to get to the power, we need to have a people power. If we got to get the power through the election, people have to know the reality, discuss about the reality, discuss about the problem, look about solution, look about causes of solution. And you build the powerful men and women with this concept of power, like power means the ability to define reality. People learn how to define the reality, but discuss the reality, but look for common solution for this problem they find in this discussion about their reality. Mm-hmm. Then this dynamic has been helping us to encourage and get more and more people to the process of resistance movement in the country.
Well, I'm speaking with Dr. Luther Castillo of Honduras, who was chosen as the country's Doctor of the Year about 5 or 6 years ago. He set up a community hospital with participatory health care and free health care in his community. and he's been involved in this national resistance movement that's been challenging not only the coup, but the government that succeeded after the coup in an election that was disputed and was not kosher. But I'm wondering, Dr. Castillo, how you view U.S. policy toward Honduras, because on the one hand, when the coup happened, President Obama called it a coup within the first 48 hours, and then the State Department and Hillary Clinton never used the word coup, and the whole Obama administration seemed to be quite content with the coup, ultimately.
Yeah, it was a surprise, because the same day of the coup, President Obama speak from Russia and say they condemn the coup. And days after, the Secretary of State said, oh, we are in the process of analysis what was happening. We don't have the name how to call. It was so very surprising to know that the kidnapping a president by the military, taking a military truck, yet took him to the military airport, put it in a plane by military, and take it to other country and land in U.S. base first, taking him to Costa Rica. You know, they were still discussing what's the name to call.
Sounds like a coup to me.
Yes, you know, it was like a duck, swim like a duck,
right.
and walk like a duck. You know, it's just difficult to this process.
But I mean, it was very strange because it kind of typifies what's happened under the Obama administration, in that the rhetoric at one level is better. Obama called it a coup. The substance, ultimately, is pretty much the same.
Yeah, and later on, we found out in Washington all those people who were working to support the coup. You know, the most biggest lobbyists and the Congress in the United States introducing a resolution to support the coup, even in the. In the state's capital, I find out even in California, in the capital of California, lobbies in to support the coup, to support the illegal election in Honduras. That means it was a lot of money to pay people. This coup has biggest support here in the process Then we find out that all those things with many of our friends here who were accompanying us, even some Congress people like Congressman Grijalva, even like many of Barbara Lee, like Donald Penn, who died a week ago, many other fighters who accompanied us in the process, most members of the Latino caucus, Black caucus, and Progressive caucus from the Democratic Party, looking for the solution with us, denouncing the process of the human rights in Honduras. We find out that there was a big, huge supporter of the coup, people who has a lot of money to invest and lobbies for the coup.
So it was the oligarchy not only in Honduras, but it was the oligarchy in the United States.
It was the oligarchy in the United States, because the same company who oppressed people in the United States are the same company who oppressed people in Honduras and Colombia all over the world. You know, there's a common enemy who they joined together quickly to defend their status quo.
We only have about 30 seconds left. If the listener who's been hearing us talk, Dr. Castillo, for the last little bit, wants to find out more information or help the people of Honduras, what should that person do?
Then they can go to our webpage. If you want to help us to collaborate with our healthcare program, they can sponsor a nurse, they can sponsor our medicine, they can donate through our webpage, www.primerhospitalgarifuna.com.
Okay, so that's like Primer Hospital, and then Garifuna, GARIFUNA.com. And also, people can probably find out more information at the Honduras Solidarity Network, which has been sponsoring your trip here in the United States. Dr. Luther Castillo, thanks so much for being my guest today.
Thank you. Thank you for this wonderful opportunity.
My pleasure.
Today's program is available online at progressive.org. You can also write to us at 409 East Main Street, Madison, Wisconsin, 53703. Our music is by Mufa. Progressive Radio is produced by Elizabeth DiNovella and engineered at Audio for the Arts in Madison, Wisconsin.